Old Dangerfield, and as I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it is named after Rodney Dangerfield, right? I think so.
Yeah, Bill, that?
Yes, it true? That? That's what I heard. They, you know, you make up a lot of tunes, you need a lot of names, and see somebody on TV, and name it after him. And again, while you guys are playing, I was thinking now there's some special connections here to Bill Monroe, and Bill Monroe is a real important dude in bluegrass. There's a The debate will always rage whether he actually invented it all by himself or whether he had a lot of assistance and happened to be the band leader and then took...
Did he invent it or did he just make it up?
Well, Earl Scruggs would say we were all working on it together and he was the band leader. Of course, it wouldn't have happened without him, but we were all creating that music. And when Bill happened to be called the father of bluegrass, he happily, you know, went along with the theory that he was the originator of the music, invented the music as though, and he one time said, I felt like Henry Ford one time and I thought I'd make a new kind of music. And anyway, that's contested, but nobody more than Bill Monroe acted like a father to bluegrass music for his entire life and sort of guided it and wanted it to be right and told people when they were not on the right track and this kind of thing. And Byron Berline and Richard Green, both in the band in the 1960s, Peter Rowan, and David Greer's dad, Lamar Greer, on the banjo, was in the same band with Monroe and Rowan and Green. So,
here's a bell for my father.
Right. Well, he had some kind of connection. And there's other connections in the band, but would you just give me some indication, maybe, David, of where the Bill Monroe influence came into your life and to what degree it's a big influence or not so much?
It kind of came in right under the armpit and exited my pinky. Just straight through, clear shot.
That's wonderful. If he was still alive, you probably wouldn't have said that or get back to him or something.
Well, the only thing that confuses me about Bill being the one and only father of bluegrass is how come there's so many mothers playing this music?
Okay. Thank you, David.
Segue right into what you were thinking about.
Yeah. No, one question. I was just talking with Pete and Richard last night and said, you know, it's real important that that Monroe's influence be carried on in bluegrass. He's such an important person, provided us so much repertoire. Like out of the three tunes you played so far, he played John Hardy. His name of an instrumental was at least the play on words that Todd used for his tune. And then they played one of his tunes just now. And this is psychograss. This is the, you know, the extreme progressive wing. And they're still kind of doing things with reference anyway to Monroe. How many people never did get to see Monroe? And, you know, that's an awful lot of you. And he's only been dead 6 years. And he was playing in Colorado. He's on tour a lot. Even in his 80s, he was doing that. He died when he was almost 85 in 1996. And how many people own at least one Bill Monroe record? Like to see that. Okay, that's good. It'd be easier to, might be embarrassing, but raise your hand if you don't have a Bill Monroe record, if you would, just to see if there's some of you there. Yeah, it's a pretty small percentage. Well, is Steve within earshot right now? Because I did put together this list of box sets. I guess I mentioned that yesterday, and I think they reprinted them, and I'm not sure where they're gonna have a pile of them, but you can order them from county sales or some of the better mail order outlets. You probably won't find them in record stores that easily, but the big repertoire is there. Anyway, Todd did a real important thing about Bill Monroe a few years ago. He even got to win a Grammy for it. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I had this idea that we should really honor Bill Monroe while he's alive, do a tribute while he's around. And so I just asked a whole lot of my friends to play on a record. I have 30 great musicians, did all of original songs that Bill wrote. And Pete Rowan's on it, David's on it, Del McCurry's on it. I kind of mostly let everybody pick their own material, what they wanted to do for Bill. And Bill actually died just before it was finished, or before it was released. But we told him about it, and he said, I appreciate that. So that's what I wanted, that's what I meant to do, and it happened in a way.
And the name of the record?
Oh, it's called... True Life Blues, the songs of Bill Monroe.
Great. Also, one of the new additions to our songbook, I didn't discover this till later yesterday afternoon, but The song In the Pines is there. That's on that record, right?
No. Isn't it? We did stuff he wrote.
So oh, that's right. He didn't write that. You're right. Okay. Well, anyway, that'll be a good one for us all to learn later on. And the words are real easy, and the harmonies are easy. It's really an easier tune than I threw at you yesterday. But we'll get to that later. And I don't know if you want to tell the whole story of the Bill Monroe audition.
Might? Bill Monroe audition?
You don't have to if you don't want to.
I don't mind. All right, this was 1975. I was driving out to California from New York City just to go out there, and I think I played a little bit out there. And driving back, I stopped through Nashville because I wanted to audition for Bill Monroe. And Bob Black was in the band at that time. And when was this? Must have been the later 80s, I guess. Anyway, he's a wonderful banjo player, and he got me passed to get backstage at the Opry, and I saw these country music stars going through with their friends and wives and girlfriends and whatnot and boyfriends. And Bill Monroe showed up kind of just about last in a beat up old station wagon just by himself, and everyone was sort of schmoozing with the guard, and Monroe just got had it and drove on. Sort of a quiet fellow at times. And anyway, so went backstage and talked to Bob Black to see if it would be a good time to see Monroe and do a little audition before they played, and he came back and said, no, this isn't a good time right now, and so how about coming back after the show? And so I came back after the show, and he said, well, this isn't a good time, can you come back tomorrow? And I went, well, because I had to leave the next day. So anyway, I got to come backstage after the show, and there's Monroe sitting in a chair reading his fan mail, and he kind of nodded to me for a second, and then I opened up my banjo case and took out the banjo. And Monroe said, do you have a guitar, man? And I said, no. So he let me play with whoever was playing guitar, Ralph Lewis or whoever at that time. And when I would travel in those days, I used to buy Time magazine. I had the Time magazine in the bottom of the banjo case. And it happened to be the week that Patty Hearst had been arrested for being a member of the Symbionese Liberation Army. And on the cover, she was giving the power salute like this. And I look over at Monroe, who's just looked up from his fan mail, and he's looking in the banjo case. I thought, I've probably blown this audition. and I played, I think, Molly and Tenbrooks and Bluegrass Breakdown or something like that. And, you know, you got to play the melody. So I was really careful about playing the melody. And afterwards, Monroe said, you pick good boy, but stick to the melody. So, and that was it. I never got the call. I waited by the phone for years. It never...
Oh, he left me a message. But didn't I get that to you? No. He said, play a little bit more of the melody, he said. No. Anyway, I don't know if there's anything particular that either of you guys has about Monroe. If not, we could just move on and pick another tune.
I would just add that he was one of the great band leaders of America, really. I mean, just unbelievable when you look at the legacy. And he always seemed to have some of the greatest instrumentalists in his band who were individually pushing the limits of where their instruments had been at that time, whether you're talking about, you know, Earl Scruggs and what he had done on the banjo, or he hired Bill Keith and great fiddle players, you know, all the great fiddle players came through there, guitar players, you know, people who were reinventing traditional American music, really. And a lot of people think of Monroe as traditional music, but I think of it as extremely progressive. When you reference it to what was happening in old-time music in the 40s or something. Monroe, when he came on the scene, just kind of blew everybody away, and it was like far out. He was playing faster and hotter and in weird keys and with chord progressions that hadn't been heard by the rural pickers at that time. So that's all I would add.
He's a fine fella.
Oh, yeah, go.
Another thing, I mean, he was an incredibly powerful, I mean, physically he was powerful. There are stories about him carrying all the bluegrass boys, like, on his shoulders and in his arms and things like that. Seriously, I mean, there's a story like that. And then, I guess in the 40s there was a thing, he had a tent show he'd go around with, and he'd have an exhibition baseball game. He'd show up in town and play baseball. And I got a chance to have dinner with Monroe back in the mid-60s. I won't go into the boring details, but afterwards we got to ride over to the show that they were doing in Rochester, New York, in the Bluegrass bus, and there were baseball mitts up in the upper berth there, so he was still into it back then. But what I was going to say is that same time I was auditioning, I went
into the dressing room where they were rehearsing before the show. And Monroe's voice, just to get back to the powerful thing, he had such an amazingly powerful voice just singing in this. It was a fairly large room, but when he started singing, and this was without amplification, he even drowned out the banjo player. It was amazing. But his voice was just like huge and hugely powerful. And I'd heard him millions of times, seen him live and everything, but through a microphone, it was, you just don't get the impact of hearing it just right there in this room without amplification. So, powerful voice.
So what happened? Well, we'll talk about some other influences and stuff, and we'll also get a chance, if some of you want to ask some questions of the band, but why don't you get some more music in there now?